Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hey, everyone. Have you been to the Organic Gardener Podcast website and signed up for our email list? If you go there, you will get my new PDF, 7 Awesome Ways to Find More Time in Your Garden. And it's just some tips that I've learned from listening to my amazing guests who are always sharing with us super effective ways to be a better gardener. So if you head over to the organicgardenerpodcast.com and enter your email, you'll get 7 awesome ways to find more time in your garden. You can also get a copy of our ebook of Organic Gardening Basics. And just all the show notes are there, all the links to our show. So, and I'll be sending out some Golden Seeds newsletters as I get them done. And of course, you'll get a special invitation to join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook community. Hope to see you there. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. I'm like so excited to introduce this guest because I heard about her when I was listening to Katie Krimitzos's Businesswoman Rock podcast and said, oh my God, I need to talk to this woman and get her to share her knowledge with my listeners because we are just going to learn a ton today. Not only does she have 2 awesome books on chickens and ducks, but she is one of the most respected and knowledgeable people in the garden blogging world. And she is even taking a master gardener class as we speak. So I know we are all going to be super inspired when we hear her journey today. So from the blog Fresh Eggs Daily, The Best in Natural Chicken Keeping Since 2009, Living with, Loving, and Gardening with Chickens, here is Lisa Steele. So welcome to the show today, Lisa.
Hi, Jackie. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. And listeners don't know, but we started this, and this was some of the beginnings of my computer problems, and I lost all the first 15 minutes. So Lisa is like totally taking time out of her day to come back and redo the whole thing. Knock on wood, my MacBook is going to be in prime form today, but I think I got that bug fixed. So go ahead and tell us about yourself.
Okay. That's
just like a little introduction, I guess. And then I usually ask about your very first gardening experience, but just like, you know, just give listeners a little bit of background.
Okay, well, I grew up in New England, across the street from my grandparents' chicken farm. They were chicken farmers by trade and raised the chickens for meat and eggs, and they had a restaurant during World War II. That's how they supported their family. So then when my mom and dad got married, built a house across the street, and we had chickens in the backyard, you know, just kind of a casual backyard flock. So then I went to college, and then I ended up working on Wall Street for, I don't know, a number of years, but it wasn't really me, who I was, whatever. So long story short, my husband and I got married. He was in the Navy, so we bounced around a bit. And his last tour of duty was in Virginia at the Norfolk Navy base. And he had some horses. He always wanted horses, and we had them in our backyard. We had bought a little farm there, knowing that he was going to retire out of there. And so we got some chickens, and I started a little flock, which led to a Facebook page and the blog. I guess I knew more about chickens than I realized, you know, just growing up around them, even when I wasn't in charge of them. You know, I had picked some things up, and I was doing things naturally. When I first started talking about raising chickens, not too many books or magazine articles were talking about doing it naturally. They were just talking about using antibiotics and chemicals and medications, and that really wasn't what I wanted to do. I mean, I've always, I've made homemade body things and lotions and cleaning products and that. I'm not big on chemicals. So, you know, I started talking about something that was a little unique and people started listening. And that led to my 2 books, as you mentioned. And I have a 3rd book coming out in December, which is actually about gardening with chickens. So I've just kind of, you know, incorporated my background in chickens along with my kind of lifelong love of gardening and turned it into a career of sorts.
Awesome. Well, so I'm super curious about the gardening with chickens because, so my husband and I had a little bit of a dilemma last summer. I finally, after 10 years of us having chickens, talked him into building me like some kind of gate so I could let the chickens out into the woods, and they weren't supposed to get into the garden part, which is all fenced in. But since then, we only have 3 chickens left. But they all know how to get into the garden. They can hop over all the fences. They fly wherever they want. One of them, the rooster, sleeps in the tree. And just like, so now my big challenge is, what do I do with these chickens that are all in my garden? So I don't know if you have any advice for that.
Yeah, chickens are hugely destructive. And really, I mean, the best thing to do is pen up your chickens or put fences around all your gardens. You know, they've got to be high enough that the chickens can't flop over them, obviously. But there are other ways. I mean, you got to protect the roots of, you know, your bushes and your shrubs and your landscaping and your small plants, and maybe cage, you know, some of your plants until they're a little bit more established. But chickens are terribly destructive to gardens. I mean, it takes a lot of managing to actually garden with your chickens. And during the growing season, pretty much, you know, I just keep them penned up or let them out when I'm out there so I can steer them away from the garden.
Okay. So you do let them out when you're out there? Because that's been our, like, I think my husband, like, so we built, I was kind of telling you in the pre-chat, we dug a new well. So he built this mini farm, I call it, down like across the road. And they have not gotten into there, which I think is so interesting because the fences are exactly the same height and everything. But somehow they hop over this fence really easily. But they have not broken into that garden. So I don't know if he's just going to ignore that. And we've been building, like, when before he put this big fence up, we had, like, you know, little beds, and he would build like these little chicken wire teepees to keep the deer out. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of back to that thing. And maybe that's what we're gonna have to do again.
You know, exactly, use deer fencing or poultry netting, or, you know, just, it doesn't have to be chain link or welded wire or something. It can just be really netting just to keep the chickens out, you know, of whatever you really don't want them to get in. And sometimes where you situate the garden, you know, like you said, they'll find one garden, they won't necessarily find another. You know, if you plant where they tend to hang out anyway, obviously they're going to find it quicker than if it's, you know, somewhere tucked away that they generally didn't roam over there anyway.
Okay. Yeah, they're kind of like, it's so interesting. And like, they totally remind me of the cartoon, you know, that red horn foghorn, because the rooster will march the chickens all around the outside perimeter of the fence. Because it's like this huge fence that, like, it takes off of both porches and goes out and down and around. I don't know if I'm explaining, off of the house. So like, you can actually walk across both porches without having to open a gate. And we have not had any animals go that. We did have a deer cut across our porch once or twice, but for the most part, we've never really had an animal in there. And they don't go that way, but they hop over that fence. And then, and then their pen is right off of that, so they have like a little door that goes from the main garden to their fence. And then I had him build this outside door that went out into the forest, but that was a mistake. But yeah, they're kind of funny the way that rooster just marches them all around the outside perimeter of the big huge garden. And then I don't know, they're interesting. So but anyway, so let's hear about, so you kind of did, I guess, tell us about your very first, I mean, you said that you grew up across from a chicken, what was it again? A chicken?
Yeah, it was my grandparents' chicken farm. I mean, it wasn't like a Purdue or a Tyson type, you know, they just had a big barn with a couple hundred chickens in it, I guess. But they did sell commercially to other restaurants and to people and all that. But I did garden. It was in the country. It was in Massachusetts. So I lived out in the country in New England, and we always had a vegetable garden growing up. You know, my mom would plant, you know, whatever, broccoli or lettuce, spinach, stuff like that for us to eat. But I do remember I had a pet rabbit growing up, and I wanted to plant carrots for my pet bunny. So one year she made me a little garden. It was probably like 2 feet square. And I planted all these carrot seeds, and then I harvested the carrots all summer for my pet rabbit. So that was kind of my very first garden experience.
That's so sweet. My stepdaughter was telling me my granddaughter's getting ducks. I think they're coming like the middle of May. So she'll probably have like a little thing like that. She's such an interesting high school student. She's really into gardening and farming and doing all sorts of things. Okay, so how then did you learn how to garden organically? Like, did your grandparents do that and your mom, or
did you do that down the line? Well, I guess my grandparents did. I think my grandparents' generation, pretty much everybody just did organic because, you know, there wasn't Lowe's or Home Depot or, you know, somewhere to buy chemicals. So they just kind of planted stuff and it grew, whatever. And my mom was kind of a product of the 60s and 70s and was all into health food and no chemicals and all that. So I just kind of grew up in a household where, you know, chemicals weren't the first thing you reach for. Mm-hmm. And it just makes so much sense to me. So, you know, that's what I do. It's a bit challenging. Obviously you have, you know, bug problems or whatever, but the chickens are great because they'll eat all your bug eaten produce and they'll eat the bugs out of your garden. So, you know, it's really helpful to have chickens when you garden because they don't care if a tomato has a bug in it or, you know, a broccoli head has some worms in it. They'll eat them anyway.
Do you want to tell us about something that grew well this year or like last year, maybe last summer?
Well, we just moved to Maine last August, so this is my first year of kind of learning Zone 5 gardening. So I actually haven't planted anything yet for this year. Memorial Day weekend is the rule of thumb that you don't plant. Before, I do have some tomatoes started under a grow light in the house, but they're not in the ground yet. But I did plant garlic when we first got here. I planted it in October, I think. So I have 150 garlic cloves that hopefully will be ready next month. I'm really excited about that. I love planting garlic. And, you know, coming to Maine in August, that's about really all I could manage to do, you know, before it started snowing. But in Virginia, I really had a nice cold crop garden. You know, I could plant pretty much year round. So in the fall, I would plant Swiss chard and kale and Brussels sprouts and broccoli and all that kind of stuff and really be able to harvest it all through the winter, which is really nice. Here in Maine, I will not be having a winter garden. Nothing really grows under 4 feet of snow. But I'll have a short growing
like
season,
snow?
But I'm told. I love the snow.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I do.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. You're going to have a short growing season.
Well, yeah, we'll have a short growing season in Maine, but from what I understand, and that's one reason I held off taking the Master Gardener class till now, is because I knew we were moving eventually to Maine, and I really wanted to take it once we were up here because the classes focus a lot on the local, what grows, what doesn't, how to grow things. So I'm really glad I waited. But from what they say is that it's a short growing season, but the days are so much longer here because it's the northern latitude that things grow really, really fast. So it is entirely possible to grow pretty much anything that, you know, I might have grown in Virginia or probably not that much further south. We can't grow citrus or avocados or anything like that, but most of your regular garden vegetables are going to do just fine. You just got to wait to plant them until a little bit later.
Yeah, that's true. We have similar like that already. It's staying late till after 9 o'clock at night. It drives me crazy.
I know.
But I'm such a morning person. I'm like, you're stealing an hour of my morning every day. I will complain all the way till November and it changes back. But it's true. The days are definitely way longer in the northern latitudes and you do have a longer period of daylight. So do you want to tell us about something that didn't work quite so well the way you thought it was going to last season? Maybe didn't go as expected.
You know, it's funny because we were in Virginia so long that I kind of had gotten used to what worked and what didn't. I was always kind of upset that we couldn't grow rhubarb because I really love strawberry rhubarb pie, but I will be able to grow that here in Maine. So that's one good thing. But I had actually gotten pretty good at Virginia gardening. I mean, I planted peas and strawberries and you know, things like that really early, like in February. And then by June, pretty much figured the garden was going to be done. And it just got so hot. So I would plant a lot of herbs. I really love growing herbs. You know, they're pretty much all of them are Mediterranean. So they like the sandy, hot, not much water, that kind of stuff. But my biggest problem with any garden is I lose interest in the maintenance. You know, I start off really well and I sketch it out and I plant it and I buy all the plants and I get the soil ready and I plant everything. And then partway through the growing season, I just get so tired of it. And I, you know, stop weeding. I stop, you know, trimming anything. So I think that's
cool.
Probably my worst
problem. I'm like that too.
Yeah, maintenance is my strong suit.
I know. I tell listeners all the time, I'm like, if it was up to me, everything would like dry, because there'll be like 4 days in the summer where I won't even get down to the garden. And even like, I just planted this little bed of lettuce and Mike's still like on me all the time at night. No, hey, you didn't water that lettuce you planted. And I'm like, oh yeah, I have to do that every day.
Just yeah, I'm not good at watering either. I like when it rains and you don't have to water, because yeah, that's, and you know, once I get the hose out and I start doing it, you know, it's just maybe after dinner or whatever. And, you know, I just really enjoy it once I'm out there doing it. But the thought of having to do it is just not something that I look forward to. And I don't know why, because it is really enjoyable just to kind of stand there and water the garden, you know, take a minute and just like breathe and all that. But yeah, watering and weeding are not things I really enjoy.
So on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Well, I think the planning and the going through the catalogs and the websites and, you know, picking out what I'm going to grow. Every year I grow a really wide variety of herbs. Like I have a lot of, you know, perennials like lavender and the mints and thyme and oregano and stuff like that. But every year I like to add in some annuals. So I'll pick like four different kinds of basil and, you know, do dill and you know, pineapple sage and just some kind of neat herbs each year.
Mm-hmm. I know. I'm totally addicted. Like, I'm just like you, I think. I end up always going to the nursery and then getting sucked into the nursery. Although our best local nursery he closed and sold it to somebody else, and she doesn't have, like, he had years and years, so he would like dig up the perennials in his yard and you could get these great deals and stuff that had been locally accumulated. And but even sometimes I'll go to like the store and just, you know, I see those things sitting on the shelves, I'm like, oh, we should take some of this home and we should take some of that and let's plant some of this. And then, and of course my husband's the one that does all the work. At my house, I'm pretty spoiled. He's like, he totally spoils me. Like, he'll get the bed ready and like put all the fresh dirt in the compost and mix it up and get it all flat and smooth, and then he'll be like, okay, come down and bring your packet of seeds, and gets it all ready for me, and then pretty much takes care of it too. But okay, well, so let's see, what's the best gardening advice you have ever received?
Well, I think it was kind of indirect. It was a lesson, but not necessarily direct advice. My father-in-law has a huge garden every year, lives by himself, actually up here in Maine. And then he winters in Florida, summers in Maine. And he would plant this gigantic garden every year, year after year after year. And then all summer complain about how big the garden was, how the deer were getting in, you know, how he was just harvesting way too much stuff than he would ever be able to eat, and, you know, ever. And year after year, and I'm just thinking to myself, why doesn't he plant a smaller garden? And the next year, same thing. Huge garden, too much stuff, too much to take care of, blah, blah, blah. You know, so I think I learned from that is to only plant what you need. Be reasonable as far as your space goes. You know, you don't need a gigantic garden if you're just one or two people. And really plan out, you know, how much of this stuff. One year I planted cherry tomatoes, and I've decided I hate cherry tomatoes because they all turn ripe like the same day. And there's so much pressure to pick all those stupid little tomatoes. And then you have to eat them. So I would just rather a regular tomato plant that gets like, you know, one or two tomatoes ripe in a day, not 400 the same day. I just cherry tomatoes just stress me out way too much.
That's funny. I'm the total opposite. Like, that's like the only kind of tomatoes I like to plant. Because you can just go down there and pick them. And but yeah, we do have that problem that they do get ripe at the same time. That used to be one of my big questions. I kind of cut a couple questions out because my interviews were getting too long. And I used to have this one question about, you know, what do you do about harvesting? Because I would always end up with just too much stuff all at once. And it was just always too much for me to, like, you know, I'd try to give it away. I'd bring it to work. I'd, you know, just do whatever I could with it. And it just seemed like I still always have this huge abundance of, like, one thing. It's never enough to, like, take to a farmer's market to sell, or, like, you know, and it would just, I don't know. So I feel your pain there. But I like that advice to, just grow what you think you're going to eat. And Megan Kane's been on my show a few times. She is a very strategic planner, and she always starts with your shopping list. And I think that's a great way to think. What do you buy all the time? And that's kind of why I planted a lettuce garden this year. That's just mostly right. greens, because that's what I love the most and eat practically every day, guaranteed. So I think that's great advice.
So, yeah, that's a good point, too, is to grow what you eat. I mean, you know, if your family doesn't eat eggplant, then don't plant eggplant. You know, really think about what it is you're going to the store to buy and then plant those things. That's great advice, and it seems so simple, but so many people don't do that. Another good thing is to plant staggered, like maybe plant, you know, two plants this week and then wait a week or two and plant two more and then plant two more, because that way you stagger your harvest. And that I never remember to do. Like, I open that seed packet and I just start planting, you know.
Staggering. Well, and then the other thing I think you're going to find that we also have the same problem with is because you do have that shorter season, that staggering, it just doesn't work. As like, a lot of times you're like just chomping at the bit to get things in the ground, so they're gonna have enough time right. to mature before that first frost, because we can get our first frost at the end of August, certainly by the first week or two in September. So
right.
our last frost is in June.
Yeah, you're talking more like a 7 or 8 zone, or 9 zone, where you can get a couple good harvests in. I would definitely stagger there because you have such a long growing season. But yeah, for us, you're lucky if you get your one. That's true.
Yeah, we're 4B, I think. So we're right about where you are. You said you're zone. Okay. We're like right on that border, 4B, 5. But
yeah, I'm right on 5A, 5B.
Since I've had the show, people have been asking me, so I kind of found out that we're, and there's somebody had a magazine called 4B, which is for gardening in the Rocky Mountains. Down in Bozeman near us. Yeah. So, I think, I know they say staggering. I kind of tried to save the seeds this year, but the question will I get more in? And then last year, the other thing was I staggered my sunflowers. And it still seemed like they all kind of bloomed at the same time, like the same last couple of weeks in August. All the sunflowers, didn't matter whether I planted them in April or if I planted them in June, they seemed to all be blooming at the same time. So I think, I don't know. But I know other people have told me that. Like Lisa Ziegler told me to plant, last year my goal was to plant 750 sunflowers because I was going to try to be a market flower farmer.
Right.
And then after talking to her, I realized I need to plant like 750 a week for like 6 weeks or 10 weeks or something.
Oh my goodness.
I'm just going to try to grow them for the birds.
Yeah, better
this
idea.
Year, I'm later than actually... ever. Sorry.
Oh, really? No. I was just going to say Lisa Ziegler used to live about a half hour from me in Virginia.
She did? I wondered about that.
Yeah, I actually met her at the Mother Earth News Fair a couple of weeks ago. I had never met her before that, but I wanted to get down to her cut flower farm, but I never did. But it looks beautiful in the pictures. But yeah, she's got a much longer growing season, so much easier to actually support yourself on your flower sales, I think.
Yeah, and she just grows incredible amounts of flowers. Just, I don't think I could ever get up to that pace. But you never know with Mike's big mini farm what he's going to do. We're hoping to get those high tunnels this year. We applied for some kind of program where you can get, they don't, I think they give you like 75%. They reimburse you after you put your high tunnels up. They come, like, you have to get your land approved. So they came out and we filled in the application. We got it. And so we're still waiting to see if we get approved. So probably even if we get them put in this year, they won't be any good till next year. But still, that'll be helpful. Yeah. And then I was talking to somebody the other day who said she put perennials in a corner of one. And I thought, oh, that's a good idea to have some stuff that's going to come back automatically.
Interesting.
It was like lemon sorrel or something. Yeah. So what was I going to say, though? I can't remember. Do you have a favorite tool that you like to use? Like when you moved, I usually ask if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without? When you moved, was there something that you were like, this is coming first, that you grabbed right away?
You know, actually not. I'm not a big glove wearer. and I tend to use my hands more than I should. So, I mean, I've given up on manicures. I haven't had a manicure in like 10 years, but, you know, I like digging with my hands, and I like as much as I can, you know, just using my hands, which I don't know why, but really the one thing that I did leave behind that I found I couldn't live without is I have one of those little plastic, it's like a dump cart. It's like a wagon, but you can unclip it and then dump it. You know what I mean? So it's like a dump truck, but it's like a little wagon cart. Well, I left mine in Virginia, and I said, I need another one of these, because just for hauling anything, I mean, bags of peat moss or seeds or, you know, stones to use as a little paver or border or whatever, or even if you're weeding, I just like to toss the weeds in that and then just wheel it back to wherever I'm going to dump the weeds. So that little cart is like just indispensable. It just makes gardening so much easier because you're not hauling stuff. You're just pulling it in this little cart.
I totally agree. That's so funny. When my friend Lisa here in Montana interviewed me, because she's in my Toastmasters group, and she kind of flipped it on me. She's like, who's going to interview you? And when she asked me that question, my first gut reaction had always been a shovel. But then I thought, you know what? I couldn't live without my wheelbarrow. I wouldn't want to live mm-hmm. to me. Yeah, I totally agree that hauling things and rocks, seems like we're always hauling rocks, but compost and, you know, you could find something to dig with. I think I could, like, you know, make a hole with a stick or a branch, or I could use, you know, newspaper, like somehow cardboard. I could make a shovel. I mean, maybe not for like getting outside and like a brand new bed, but like on the fancy beds that Mike's built, especially the deep beds. I just felt like a wheelbarrow is, and especially ours got a flat for a couple of seasons and we had a hard time replacing it. So yeah, I totally agree. So I hope you get one of those. I like that idea. A little push one that comes apart. I'm picturing like this little green kind of thing.
Yeah. My old one was green. My new one is black, and it's, I don't know. I mean, it's not huge. I actually like it better than a wheelbarrow because it's a little bit lower. So if you're sitting on the ground or kneeling, it's easier to throw stuff into it. And then, like I said, it does dump, but it's more flat, and it's easier to, like, you can pull it with one hand. So, like, a wheelbarrow, you kind of need two hands. This one, you just need one hand for the handle, so you can also have, you know, something else in your hand, in your other hand. And I just find my little dump cart, I don't even know what it's called, but I got one at Tractor Supply, and it's just like this little garden cart that has this dump feature that you can just tip it when you're where you need to go. So that's, like, my go-to garden tool.
Awesome. I think listeners are going to love that, because if they don't have one, they're going to say, I got to get one of those right away. Yeah. Yeah. How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
Oh, okay. So my favorite recipe, which isn't even a recipe, is fresh tomatoes, fresh basil, fresh mozzarella cheese with some really good olive oil and balsamic vinegar. I mean, I could eat that for lunch or dinner or whatever in the summer. All summer long, just like slice it all up, arrange it on a plate. That's my all-time favorite, just way to use garden vegetables.
Nice. I love that. My mom makes delicious because she's in New York, and so she gets the fresh mozzarella balls. And
Agree.
And she always has fresh basil and oregano to sprinkle on it. Do you want to tell listeners about your amazing blog? My next question is, do you have a favorite internet resource?
Oh, yeah, that would definitely be my blog. No. Yeah. Well, actually, my favorite resource has become the Maine Extension Service, the University of Maine Extension Service site. If you're not already using your local extension or state extension service, it's a great resource. I mean, they have handbooks and online guides and things on planting, like everything, pest control, you know, how to raise chickens, how to identify like local bugs. It's just so full of information that's localized to your area. So the Extension Service website is probably my go-to. And, you know, unlike just kind of Googling things and then you get like a million answers and you're not sure what's right, mm-hmm. on the Extension and University sites, you know, the information is good. You know, so you don't have to worry about double checking it or triple checking it. If you read it there, you know, it's been fact checked. It's been written by, you know, professionals and experts and stuff. So I definitely highly recommend bookmarking your local extension website.
That's a great one. But will you tell listeners a little bit about your blog?
Okay, yeah, so my blog is Fresh Eggs Daily, and I focus on natural chicken keeping. I do have some duck articles on there, too, some information about raising ducks, and gardening, lots of herb gardening. I kind of focus on culinary herbs just because they're a favorite of mine, but I do also have some vegetable gardening tips, lots of it how it's related to chickens, but some of it just, you know, standalone gardening information. And that's kind of what I focus on. I do share some recipes, mostly either that use eggs or produce or herbs. I mean, because that's basically just what I have to cook with for the most part. So it's all kind of garden chicken centric, but it's fresheggsdaily.com. And there's along the cross, there's tabs, you know, for the chicken care guide or ducks or recipes or gardening or whatever. So I just kind of have fun with it. And I try to update it twice a week and just kind of let my readers know what I'm up to, what I'm doing. And that's that.
Do you want to talk about your journey as a blogger at all? Like, one of the things I like that totally hit me when you were talking to Katie was that you said that for like the first 2 years, you felt like you were making like 40 cents an hour because it's just, yeah. And you said that it's like a full-time job. And I just like that just so resonated with me because sometimes I feel like a lot of pressure from people. They're like, why are you doing this? And you spend all this time doing it. And, you know, are you making any money from it? Like, how many people ask you that question all the time? You know, and I'm just like, well, I'm just building my audience and, you know, I don't know. And different things. And so, and also like you started out like on Facebook, right? And don't you have like some incredible amount of like 65,000 likes on your Facebook page or something?
Oh, I have like 660,000. So like well over half a million, which is kind of incredible. Yeah, it is really crazy. It's, you know, like I said, though, I think the message that I had with the natural chicken keeping, you know, don't reach for the chemicals or antibiotics. There's other ways to do this. And in fact, I just had a woman email me today a question, and she had said some of the vets and other experts were kind of disagreeing with something that I've been saying on my blog about how I raise my chickens. And she said, but, you know, she said, I know you tell us what you do personally, and I see pictures of your chickens every day, and they look so healthy, and they're happy, and they're not dying, and you're not losing them. So I have to believe that your information is good. You know, and to me, that's such a huge testament because, you know, if you go to a vet's website or one of those forums or whatever, you are not seeing the chickens of the person that's giving you the advice. And I think that's really important. You know, so people really, they connect with me, they connect with my chickens, they know all their names. So I started the Facebook page and then I started the blog basically to archive information. So when people ask me a question, I could just refer them to the blog for the information. I didn't start it to make money. I didn't expect it to be a career. Someone said to me, you know, now that you have a blog, you can get companies to advertise on your blog and make some money. And I said, well, that's good. I'm home. I mean, I'm doing this kind of as a hobby, but it would be good to make money. I mean, you know, I'm a capitalist. If I can make money, I will.
Yeah.
So I started doing it. And yes, it eventually evolved into a 40-hour, 60-hour a week work week. You know, pretty much I wake up and I start doing and I do all day until I go to sleep, you know, but I enjoy it. You know, a lot of times we'll be sitting watching TV at night and I'll be editing pictures for a blog post or whatever. I mean, do I consider that work? I don't know. I mean, it's better than sitting in a cubicle. You know, it's very easy to get caught up in it and not do anything else. So I have to make a conscious effort to like step away from the computer, you know, but it does pay off in my first month.
I usually force myself to take a break when my battery runs out.
Yeah, that's a good one. When you have to plug everything back in again, you're like, just walk away from it. yeah,
that's when I have to take a break and at least walk to the end of the property and back while it charges a little bit. And then I'll go
even when I'm watching or if I have to. You know, I take pictures. If I plant something in the garden, I take pictures of it. So, you know, a lot of times you can just throw something up on Instagram, especially. It's just part of your life. You know, I don't really consider that working. I just consider that I just took a picture of what I was doing. You know, so I don't really consider it work, but it does take time. You can't just start a blog thinking that you're going to, you know, be able to retire wealthy if you don't consider it a full-time job. I mean, it definitely does become a job. I spend less time blogging now than doing like all the other admin and stuff, really. You know, there's a point where it does translate over from, you know, I make a little extra spending money to, oh my goodness, my husband can retire and we can move to Maine and we can pay the bills with what I make, which is huge. You know, I think that was kind of the turning point where we decided we really could rely on my income to pay our mortgage, which, you know, not a lot of bloggers necessarily reach that level, but it's certainly possible. Mm-hmm. You know, in just a few years, I mean, I started my blog in 2012, I believe. So it hasn't really been that.
Really? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, I made $16 my first month as an Amazon associate. I made $16, which, you know, I was like, oh, hey, woo, $16. but now I basically pay my mortgage with that Amazon affiliate account. So it snowballs, you know, everything starts to snowball once you start getting followers and they start clicking on what you're writing and what you're saying. They tell their friends and it just kind of becomes a snowball effect. And at some point, you know, you can't even stop it. My Facebook page is so big now, I can't even begin to answer all the questions and like all the comments and all the pictures and everything. So I've just kind of given up and decided it's become kind of this monster, you know, but it is what it is. So.
Okay. How about, do you want to talk about your chicken guy that you were saying? Like, give some listeners some tips, like if they've never had a chicken or if they have chickens and they want to know how to do it naturally or they're thinking about getting a chicken or any tips I could give my granddaughter about her little ducks?
Yeah, like I said, there's a tab at the top of my blog. I have a chicken care guide and a duck care guide. And then within that guide, it's broken down by categories. So you have like the basics. You have hatching eggs, raising baby chicks, you know, feed and treats. So I've broken it down so it's really organized. You know, you can see all the articles there and, you know, click on which ones interest you for chickens and for ducks. I don't have as much information about ducks on there as I do for chickens, but there are both. So I think it's a really great resource for someone to bookmark and go to and know if they have a question about whatever, they can probably find an article on it. And my books too, Fresh Eggs Daily and Duck Eggs Daily are also really great resources because they're not really beginner guides, but they do go through all the basics. They go through everything I do with my flock, but they really focus on incorporating herbs and edible flowers and some natural things that you can do. So it's just kind of a little bit of a different twist than you might find in a traditional chicken keeping book, say.
Cool. Okay. Do you have a favorite reading material or book that you like to go to or a different blog or website that you find yourself at a lot? I guess you talked about the extension service.
Yeah. Well, you know, since we got our chickens in 2009, I think I have read pretty much every chicken book on the market. I mean, even now, anytime a new one comes out, I read them. You know, I'm interested. Has new information come out? Does somebody do something a little bit differently? Just recently, I've started to read a little bit more about natural care, which is really, really encouraging. It seemed like, you know, every book and all the magazines, you know, Chickens Magazine or Backyard Poultry Magazine, it was just the same information year after year, season after season, you know, not really doing a lot of preventive care, more like, if you see these symptoms, it means your chicken's sick and put them on this antibiotic. And if it doesn't get better, then call them and buy a new chicken. You know, that kind of information. It just seemed very rote, very routine. But the last couple books that have come out and a lot more magazine articles are focusing on some natural remedies, preventives, building strong immune systems, working a lot more to try to let your chickens keep themselves healthy. So that's really encouraging. I mean, I kind of see it as a trend, which I think is really exciting. But I mean, as for one specific, you know, I don't know. I mean, there are just so many resources out there.
That's perfect. But
the magazines are great. You know, the magazines are seasonal. So if you subscribe and you get chicks in the spring, you're going to have a lot of articles about raising chicks. You know, in the summer, you're going to have articles about keeping them cool in the summer. So the magazines in some aspects are better resources than the books because it is very seasonal. It's very relevant. You know, you're not overwhelmed with an entire book. You can kind of take it in little pieces. as your chickens get to that stage, which is kind of neat.
I like that. So keeping, I did talk to, it's funny because yesterday I interviewed this woman who I met through this podcasting friend, but she actually lived like 6 miles from me here in Montana, even though now she's in Wisconsin, but she worked for the Forest Service here for like, I can't remember, like 5 or 6 years and lived very close to me. And I had never met her, but then she worked for this woman, Pam Gurwe, who has this place called Purple Frog Gardens, who raised bunches of chickens. And Pam actually created her own, she made the food, like she ordered the sea kelp and she would, so did you do that? Like how many chickens do you have usually?
We only have a dozen now. I've had as many as 3 dozen. It's kind of a lot. I mean, we were just drowning in eggs and I couldn't remember their names and all that. I'm more comfortable with about a dozen. I mean, that seems like a good flock size for me along with our ducks. I don't mix my own feed. It can be kind of hard to get the ratios
she
right.
She had like 400 chickens. Yeah. I can see that.
And if you can bulk, you know, difference. You can buy the grains mm-hmm. in bulk and stuff, you can save money. But it takes a lot of research to get that recipe right. And I just decided that I didn't have the time. I didn't really have a place to source the grains that was local and, you know, I could do it without the shipping. So you have to be really careful with the chicken feed because it does have to be pretty nutritionally balanced, you know, in order to give them all the nutrients that they need.
Okay. Well, are you ready for my final question? It's kind of a doozy.
Yeah.
Okay. It goes, if there's one change you would like to see, Lisa, to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
Well, actually, since moving to Maine, I actually have, hunger is a huge issue in Maine. Meanwhile, Maine is so rural. People have so much land. Everything is all spread out. And I just can't understand why people are unable to feed their families when they have this land. You know, they could be growing vegetables. They could be raising chickens. You know, I mean, they could be raising herds of cows for that matter. So I think it's all about education. You know, if you're out of work, and maybe both parents are out of work, well, you've got time to garden. You've got time to raise the chickens. And I think it's just a question of educating people, showing people that it's not that difficult. It doesn't have to cost that much money. And they can feed their families not only pretty cheaply, but a lot more healthy than what's at the grocery stores. You know, so I really kind of want to get involved somehow in doing that, you know, whether it's through the Master Gardener program or not, but a lot of education, especially with the lower income people, to show them that if you plant a vegetable garden, you learn how to can or you freeze some of the stuff, you really can feed your family year round on what you've grown. And seeds, as you know, cost practically nothing. You know, so it's a really great affordable way to feed your family. It also, we were talking before we started about the water issues in a lot of this country, farmland is not being able to be irrigated. So the more you can grow in your backyard, not only is that taking some of the pressure off the resources of commercial farmers, but you are kind of ensuring that you have a ready food source, regardless of what goes on, you know, in the rest of the country. I think that nationally it could help, but I don't think that on a national level you can do these things. You have to kind of start in someone's backyard, you know, and work out from there.
I think that is perfect. I love that advice. And I think a lot of people have been talking about saving seeds too. Like if we could teach people how to save their own seeds, they get right. acclimated and then you're saving even more money. And just, I think people will, a lot of people are going to embrace it and say, wow, I can't believe I could feed my family. So I'm so glad that you're there and helping people realize that.
I think it also gives people a sense of satisfaction. I mean, if you are laid off from your job or, you know, you're on food stamps, you know, your self-esteem is not maybe the best it's ever been. But if you plant a garden, you start harvesting your vegetables, I just think things like that give you a sense of accomplishment and pride that might otherwise be missing. So something that you might, you know, get a pat on the back from your boss at work, you're not getting that anymore but maybe you grew this gigantic pumpkin or something, you know? So it's not exactly the same, but I think it can make people more excited about what they're doing day to day.
I've heard that there's a pretty big movement of young gardeners in Maine from a few different people, that's one mm-hmm. of the big hubs of young organic families going there. Maybe because is land fairly affordable there?
Yeah. Yep. There's a lot of land and it's pretty cheap. So it's perfect for some young couple that wants to move out of the city life or get started. I've heard that also, that it's just really becoming a place where young farmers are kind of picking up from wherever they are and setting down roots here, which I think is awesome. As long as it doesn't get too crowded, because then we'll have to move again.
I was just talking about that the other day on my show, that some ways I'm kind of glad it's such a hard place to make a living where we are, because otherwise we'd be inundated with people everywhere, and then it would lose a little bit of its charm of living in the woods. So
exactly.
I love people, but I just kind of like, I always thought we'd live in the middle of 100 acres instead of, we have 20 acres, which is really nice, but mm-hmm. I have a road. When I first moved here, we didn't have a road by the house, and now we have a road by the house, and kind of a little bit different. So okay, so just, do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden? Which, that was pretty much kind of a good one right there.
I was gonna say, yeah, that's a really good one. I like that. Really, that's all it is. I mean, even if you just plant a container of tomatoes on your back patio this year, that's all it takes to really get hooked. You know, like I mentioned, my father-in-law, you don't need to have a 2-acre garden. You know, just do something. Plant something on the windowsill of your kitchen. It really doesn't matter. You know, just start planting stuff, because it really is pretty addictive.
I know. I'm totally finding that. I since I started my podcast, I've definitely become more interested in the garden, and I have more stuff going this spring than I usually do. Even though, that's what I was going to say. My sunflowers are late. Usually I plant my sunflowers on Earth Day, and I haven't planted any yet this year. I started to dig up one bed and that was as far as I got. So, but yes, definitely. It's definitely addicting. And the more I've learned from my podcast, the more I've been trying to help Mike and just plant my own things. I planted some herbs. I planted rosemary and cilantro, and it wasn't chives. It was, I can't remember, something else. But, and that's the other thing. I'm going to put more chives in for the bees this year. Plant a lot of chives.
I like chives. In fact, I just found a clump of them. I want to make some deviled eggs. So I'm going to use the chives from the yard to flavor the deviled eggs. So I'm really excited about that. I said to my husband, I said, don't pick these chives. Don't dig them up out of the yard, because I'm going to use them.
I don't even eat my chives. I just like the purple flowers. And I know that the bees, and they last a really long time, and they don't take a lot of water. They pretty much take care of themselves. They'll grow pretty good here. And because we do have a pretty dry climate most of the year. And so, like, right now, it's supposed to be really moist and wet, and it's not. It's dry as can be. And so we're like, what's going to be like this summer? But you never know. So, well, do you have anything else you want to share with listeners? Did I miss anything or anything I forgot?
I don't think so. If you have any interest in raising chickens, visit my blog, Fresh Eggs Daily. And definitely next time you're on Amazon or at your local Barnes & Noble, look for Fresh Eggs Daily and Duck Eggs Daily. And then I have a new book coming out in December called Gardening with Chickens, which is going to be really exciting. I share a lot of tips on kind of gardening and having landscape and lawn and having chickens also, which, as you and I know, chickens are very destructive. So there are some precautions you have to take before you let them wander all over your property.
Yes, for sure. And so it's, we're dealing with that right now, trying to figure out what are we going to do about these chickens that are getting into our garden. So, well, thank you so much, Lisa, for sharing everything with me and dealing with my technical problems and coming back on today, and just have a wonderful day. And I hope you enjoy Maine.
Thank you so much. Yes, we love Maine, but don't move here, because we don't want more people here.
Okay.
Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hey, everyone. Have you been to the Organic Gardener podcast website and signed up for our email list? If you go there, you will get my new PDF, 7 Awesome Ways to Find More Time in Your Garden. And it's just some tips that I've learned from listening to my amazing guests who are always sharing with us super effective ways to be a better gardener. So if you head over to the organicgardenerpodcast.com and enter your email, you'll get 7 awesome ways to find more time in your garden. You can also get a copy of our ebook of Organic Gardening Basics. And just all the show notes are there, all the links to our show. So, and I'll be sending out some Golden Seeds newsletters as I get them done. And of course, you'll get a special invitation to join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook community. Hope to see you there. Thanks for listening. And remember to grow.